Okay, thank you. Today is the 18th of October 2011. My name is Millie Lake, and this interview forms part of the Brand Responsibility Oral and Digital History Project at the University of Washington. So could I just begin by asking you to state your name and title here at Cornell?
My name is Mike Powers, and I'm a Senior Director in University Communications at Cornell University. And I'm also in charge of licensing.
Okay, thank you. So could you first just begin by telling us a little bit about what your responsibilities are in charge of licensing here?
Okay, so we use the Collegiate Licensing Company to handle our licensing program. It's not large enough to warrant an internal staff. So I work closely with the CLC on licensing issues. I also work with campus groups that may be interested in creating anything that might have Cornell names or marks on it. And I work with our counsel's office as need be on issues that involve, legal use of the names and marks. That's fairly infrequent. But the entire licensing responsibility is probably about 10 to 15% of my time.
Okay. All right, thank you. And when did you first take on that role?
We took this on in 2004.
Okay, all right. So if we could just begin by talking about the Nike case, mm-hmm. Could you please tell us the story as it unfolded from your perspective and start with how the issue first came to your attention?
Okay, well, I was aware of the issue. We're a member of the Worker Rights Consortium, as well as the Fair Labor Association. I'm on the board of the Worker Rights Consortium. And so this was very much in the WRC's radar for quite a while. We were getting constant updates on what the situation was. We were monitoring it. We have a couple of very active student groups on campus, Cornell Students Against Sweatshops, and Cornell Organization for Labor Action. Most of their students are in the School of Industrial and Labor Relations, which makes sense. And so they were also paying a lot of attention to this. We were staying very, very much in communication with them on what was going on. They, of course, were pushing immediately for Cornell to disaffiliate with Nike. And as we know, that never did prove to be necessary. But
okay, so how could you talk us through the course of action that unfolded, so the decision processes that you went through when mm-hmm. this issue came to your attention, what the normal protocol at Cornell is for?
Okay, well, because we'd never been faced with something like this before, we created a licensing oversight committee. And that consisted of several faculty members, two students, the director of the Cornell store, and a couple of business managers from administrative divisions. And so we started meeting on this quite regularly. I'm guessing this was maybe early 2010 to, basically look at the issues. It was complicated a bit by the fact that Cornell's athletic department has a sideline agreement with Nike, okay, through which they receive heavily discounted Nike uniforms and sporting goods, and it's a serious six-figure savings. And since we do not, being an Ivy League school, since we don't have the huge athletic revenues that the Big Ten schools and the SEC schools have, this is a serious number for them. And so there was some concern there that, and I'm not speaking out of turn, but there was concern there that should we, break our relationship with Nike, that could lead to a problem with their arrangement. And there was some, there's a lot of money on the line for them. So we met periodically. We had a couple of conference calls with Nike representatives, where we presented our concerns, some correspondence back and forth. And ultimately, the Licensing Oversight Committee decided to recommend to the president that we allow the existing Nike contract, which this is not the athletic contract, but our license with Nike through the CLC, that we allow that to expire at the end of 2010 if they did not show some meaningful progress in the problems. And as we know, they did quite quickly, and so we did not have to pull the license.
Okay, perfect. And so you talked about having telephone conversations with Nike. Was this yourself personally or other
There
people
were
on the
four or five
committee?
of us from the Licensing Oversight Committee.
Okay, and who did you speak to at Nike? Was that
We spoke to Amanda
Kate?
Tucker and one other person I believe was with her, but I off the top of my head I can't remember who that was.
Okay.
And they were very forthcoming. I mean, they never tried to, in my mind, shrink from the argument.
Okay.
You know, they were forthcoming, they acknowledged certain problems, but they held steadfast on other items on which they felt they were right.
Yeah.
So
So one of the primary issues at the University of Washington, with regard to their code of conduct was that there was a lot of discussion in these similar comparable meetings about two issues, whether University of Washington goods had been produced at Nike factories, and then
Right.
Nike's disclosure of that information. So were they the same issues that you
They were the
were?
same issues. In fact, I spoke to someone at Washington at some point, a woman whose name is escaping me at the moment,
Probably Kathy
but
Hogan.
yeah, Kathy
Yeah.
Hogan, right. And so we had, I think, one back and forth.
Okay.
So we were sort of monitoring each other's approach to this.
Yeah, okay. And did you speak to any, were you in conversation with any other schools while this was going on?
I'm trying to remember. I'm sure that I spoke with my colleague Mary Beth Schmutz at Rutgers, only because she's a fellow board member on the Worker Rights
Okay.
Consortium. Likewise, I probably spoke to Jim Wilkerson at Duke, who's also on the WRC, and Lamar Billups at Georgetown, who's
Okay.
also on the WRC. I don't recall that I spoke to anybody else.
Okay, that's perfect. And so in your in the meetings of the Licensing Oversight Committee, was there a lot of consensus as this process was unfolding on how you should proceed as a school, or was there some disagreement?
There was general consensus. I think that the students, of course, just being students, and you know, they like drama, they just wanted us to yank the license and walk away. And
Okay.
we took a little more measured approach in the end. The one holdout, and as I recall, he voted against allowing the license to expire and all that business, was the business manager from the athletic department. But as I mentioned earlier, there was a significant financial concern there, so I understand why they did it.
Okay. And you also talked about that this Nike case was the first kind of case like this that had arisen for Cornell. And I just wondered if you could speak a little bit about why that was the case. Is that because these issues hadn't come up before with your licensees, or because this issue the students were really kind of pushing to keep on the agenda, or
I think it was a
which?
combination of the of both. Now, granted, I'd only been doing this since 2004. The Worker Rights Consortium, I believe, has been around since the end of the 1999, 2000 in there. So there may have been conversations like this prior to my taking this role over. I'm unaware of them, but it was certainly a combination of the WRC and its watchdog responsibilities. And there's no question the students played a major role in this.
Okay. And how was your interaction with the students throughout this process? Did you speak to them personally a lot, or how?
Yeah, it's always, I've always had a great relationship with the
Okay.
students, and we're very frank with each other, and we sometimes agree and we sometimes disagree, and but the lines of communication have always been excellent, and we meet pretty regularly, and we meet when things come up, and so that's I can characterize that as a completely productive relationship.
Okay, perfect. And how did they respond to, I know this, some of the students at the University of Washington were obviously frustrated by the pace of action that the university was able to take. So
well, students are generally frustrated by the pace of the real world because they operate in semesters, so they're very busy for 4 months, then they go away, then they come back, and they're very busy for 4 months. And it's the real world doesn't work like that.
And so you said that a lot of your information came both from WRC and from Nike themselves.
Right.
Were there any other sources of information that you can recall? Or?
No, I think those were our two primary sources.
Okay. Okay, I think that's excellent for Nike. I think that gives us a good sense of how things unfolded here. Can you talk just a little bit about, since the Nike settlement, how I presume you have renewed your contract with...
Well, we never let it expire. Yes, we did renew it, I'm sorry.
Okay.
As far as my day-to-day dealings with Nike, I really don't have any.
Okay.
You know, they do business, and when they want to put Cornell merchandise out into the marketplace, they submit designs to the Collegiate Licensing Company. Now we are learning that some of the things that they said that they would do, you know, following this payment of severance, are not happening. There apparently are conversations underway. I understand from Scott Nova at the WRC, who I will be seeing actually at the end of next week. We have a board meeting. So, you know, this has the potential to stir things up again.
Okay.
I hope they manage to solve the problem so we don't have to go down that road, but...
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So if we could just turn to the Russell case and go through a similar set of questions, basically.
Right.
So if you could just start with that case and how that case first came.
Well, again, it was on our radar because of my connection to the WRC. I mean, it was very much parallel to the Nike case. And then Russell came before Nike, you'll recall.
Yeah.
So, you know, students picked up on it. And the way things progressed were very, very similar.
Okay.
As I recall, we were something like the 12th school to pull the license. Ultimately, they were somewhere around 120. And Russell, at that point, finally did do an about-face and solve the problems. It's interesting because I really think that the speed with which Nike reacted to all of this was their experience in watching what happened with Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they figured that, you know, once the domino effect starts to happen and school after school starts to either pull their license or threaten to pull their license, that the handwriting is on the wall. And I don't think that... As you mentioned in your correspondence, this is really not a huge financial issue for companies of that size. I mean, the American sportswear market is something like, we make up 5% of the American sportswear market, colleges and universities. So it's really dust in the overall scheme of things. But, you know, it's very harmful to them from a public relations point of view to have this stuff become... a big issue in the public eye.
And could you speculate on why you think that is? Why it is that universities are such a kind of catalyst for...
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, we're not businesses. You know, we're not in the business of selling our merchandise to make money, although some do, and, you know, some schools do make enormous royalty revenue. It's certainly not the case with Cornell. In fact, we don't even... Our licensing revenue, which I think last year was around $65,000, could be larger, but we do not charge royalties to any businesses in our county, and that's where the bulk of sales occur, I'm sure, and that's just an old standing rule that has to do with Cornell being the 800-pound gorilla locally, and it's already perceived as throwing its weight around too much, so...
Okay, and so just a point of clarification, was the Licensing Oversight Committee established already when the Russell...
Yeah, well, that's when we established.
That's when you established
right.
it, when that issue came
right.
to your attention. Okay, and was it comprised
Same
similarly
group.
Then?
Same
okay.
group, yeah.
Okay, perfect. So, let me just...
Actually, you know what? I think it was, but now I'm starting to think maybe we didn't really do it until the Nike thing came along. Check with Lance, he would
Okay,
remember,
I will
because
do.
he's on the committee.
Okay.
I have to go back and look at my correspondence.
And with the Russell case, were you, who were you in contact with throughout those negotiations? I assume the WRC as well being, and the FLA being members, but were you in direct communication with the corporation?
Yeah, I had correspondence with Rick Medlin
Okay.
and Stan Blankenship
Okay.
and one other gentleman whose name I'm
That's
drawing a
okay.
blank on at the moment, but two or three, high-level administrators in
And
the company.
what form did that communication take? Was that phone calls
It
and
was, you know, it was
similar to
generally letters.
letters? Okay. And in those communications, what was the purpose of the communications? Was this you expressing your concerns about things that you'd learned from the WRC? Were you
And
requesting further information or?
we were expressing our concerns. They would write back. They felt very strongly that they were the victims of a sort of a campaign that was presenting them in an unfair light. They did a very good job of presenting statistics on factory closures from that part of the world in which they were not involved, trying to make the case that these were serious economic issues that were really causing the closings.
And how did you all respond?
Well, we stuck by our guns, and remember, at this point, we were just dealing with two specific factories. And where we did acknowledge that there may have been, certainly have been, some economic rationale for the closings of the factories, that we also felt that anti-union stance or an anti-union stance on the part of Russell was part of the reason they did it.
Okay, and were the students similarly active in this case, or were they less active, more active?
They
Did you
were
get?
about the same, I would say.
And was it a similar style of co I mean, I know at the University of Washington campus there was a lot more consensus among faculty, among different kind of stakeholders within the university, that a code of conduct violation had occurred. So the students and the faculty and the administrators and everybody seemed to be a lot more on the same page for this particular set of
I'd
negotiations.
say there was a lot of consensus
Okay.
in both
In both
cases,
cases,
right?
yeah.
Both
Okay,
Russell
that's
and I
interesting.
don't think that our faculty generally get. I don't know if it makes you. It makes it sound like at Washington, a lot of people are involved in this.
I mean, yeah, there are a few. They have an advisory committee on trademarks and licensing, which is comprised of probably five or six faculty members. A representative from the university administration, and then two students. I might be missing some people, but then obviously there's a very large student body who kind of remains involved, and a number of other kind of active faculty members who remain kind of
Well,
involved.
there is again, going back to the School of Industrial and Labor Relations, there's a lot of watching going on
Yeah.
because this is their field, and it's of interest to them. But we had two ILR faculty, Lance and Suraj Gurevia,
Okay.
on the oversight committee, and several other faculty who would weigh in if asked.
Okay. And do you take votes in those meetings, or is it more informal
No,
discussion? You do take
and
votes.
yeah, and late oversight committee, yeah, we
Yeah.
voted, yeah.
Okay. All right. Trying to think if there's anything else I've missed. I think that's probably the main information I was looking for. So unless there's anything else that comes to mind that I didn't ask about or didn't cover.
No, I think we covered it quite well, but I do think, I would emphasize again that I think students play such a role, such
Yeah.
an important role in this type of thing. We're all very busy people,
Yeah.
university administrators are pulled in a zillion different directions.
Yeah.
So it's sort of nice to have somebody there sort of hitting you on the toe
Making
constantly
you pay
to remind you
attention.
that, this
Yeah.
is an issue and you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So I give them enormous credit for that.
That's fantastic. And so given that, I mean, can you think of other campaigns that the students are involved in currently or over the past couple of years where they have been pressuring?
Well, we're feeling some pressure. There's always been great distrust among students about the Fair Labor Association.
Okay.
And that's because, as you know, the brands are represented on the board.
Yeah.
As are universities and as are NGOs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been, our students have been putting a lot of pressure on us to disaffiliate from the FLA. So we're having conversations with them about that.
Okay.
I know there's a similar movement at Rutgers.
Yeah.
I don't know if, are you an FLA school?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, are you experiencing
mm-hmm.
that same?
And I think there is similar, similar kind of sentiment.
Right. So we'll be having a conversation with the students very soon. We've been trying to get a meeting together, and it's just been, pulling teeth, trying to get everybody in the room at the same time. But we will move forward with it.
And do you find their arguments persuasive about the FLA, or...?
They're certainly, they're definitely persuasive, and I think that there are things within the FLA that need to be fixed. I don't think that disaffiliating is a solution, because you just walk away and you don't have a voice anymore. You're just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I take the position that if you're a member of an organization and you truly believe in what the organization is trying to do, then it's your responsibility to speak up when you think things are not working correctly and try and get them fixed.
Yeah.
So,
One thing I didn't ask about either case as well was, were you surprised by the outcomes of these cases, or did you expect, given your kind of conversations with representatives from Nike and Russell, did you expect that the situations would be resolved in the ways that they were?
I wasn't surprised in Russell. I wasn't surprised in Nike, but I was surprised at how quickly they moved.
Okay.
And to me, that says that they learned an awful lot by watching the Russell situation.
Yeah.
So I think we'll learn a lot more as we address the follow-up problems that I think both organizations are having.
Okay, well, I think that's just about it. And maybe if I come up with things when I go over the transcript,
yeah,
I can maybe send
call.
You an email and give
sure.
you a call to follow up.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.